Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hi, how are you, Olo?
Well, Mike, it looks like you have a problem with microphone. Please check your cable. Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
All right.
This is Michael.
Yeah, I can hear clearly.
Very good. This is Reverend Dr. Michael R. Vanderpool with the Magi Star Astrology Show here with Oleg Sunkel from from New York City in America right now, the United States of America. But we had met in Ukraine during the right before the Orange Revolution in 2004 in Kiev. And we decided to get together tonight and have a show about Ukraine. I may take just a few minutes, just maybe 5 minutes, to explain about my missing fiance, a Georgian citizen here in Tbilisi, the Republic of Georgia, from where I'm broadcasting live Blog Talk Radio. We went to get married on December 29th, 2014, and a barrage of phone calls came in from her family and friends in an ultra-Orthodox, cultish type of religion, actually, as it's practiced in Georgia. It's a little bit more extreme. It's an extreme version of what is in Russia or Ukraine, for example, and she disappeared after that, and the police have not been very helpful in the situation, and I've contacted U.S. Senators Claire McCaskill's office and also Senator Roy Blunt's office in the United States, and we're still waiting to see what the results of that situation will be. There's no official confirmation in terms of official documents or official statement as to her safety or her whereabouts. The laws are quite different. I was told they may have to have a parliament member contact her who is an expert in human rights, that may be the only way to confirm that she's okay, because as you know, Oleg, I have filmed here during the May 17, 2013 events where people were running by the hundreds, and there were thousands of people in the streets, but running by the hundreds to, watch people that were being beaten for supporting gay rights or things like that. And that was a thing that a Georgian journalist friend who has now left the country in fear of his life in exile, Lasha Kavitsiani, I had heard he was in Sweden. I'm not sure where he's at now. But he left in fear of his life because he was a journalist for the opposition TV9 and some other media outlet when they tried, according to him, to chase him down and maybe even try to kill him when he was filming elections under the Saakashvili government. So it's not a good situation over this way, my friend. And I'm gonna switch topics here and get right to you and the story with Ukraine. And I also want to say that this show is for entertainment purposes only. Everyone should check any sources of information on their own as far as their validity or not. And I don't give any advice. This is only for entertainment, and I expect everyone to have their own independent thinking and analysis on anything we may or may not say tonight. Certainly, we don't have all the information. So anyway, Oleg, I would like to tell you that just on a personal note that I'm going to wait and contact a private detective firm, Beowulf, in Russia later today about my fiancé, Eva, and then I'm going to also speak with U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill's office, and then I'm just going to drop that topic and start talking about the Ukraine. Is there anything in particular you'd like to start with? I mean, one question I wanted to ask you, if we could, is like, what's happening with what was 8 hours of rollouts of blackouts all across Ukraine, even in Kiev, where people were going
about. Yeah, now there is a problem because in Ukraine they don't have enough supply for gas or for coal, because most coal it was in eastern Ukraine, but they still have an old style, the Soviet era power generating plants. They still are using the Soviet era, it's old style manufacturing platforms. They still not updated them. They're still not saving electricity. They're still not using power in the optimal way. So now they're having some a lack of electricity. The only way to keep system working, they are doing the power outage for minimum 3 hours, but or average of 6 or 8 hours in most cities in Ukraine. And now, because the temperatures drops down, so I think this power outage will be for a bigger period of time. So there's not city light, there's not electricity in apartments. There is also reduced electricity consumption for manufacturing plants. So there is its situation almost like was in early 90s. And in addition to that, they had some critical situation on nuclear plant in Zaporizhia, and based on that situation, they cut off, they shut down some power generation in Zaporizhia, so this also caused some lack of electricity.
So in Kyiv, the capital city of Ukraine, about how many million people are there?
It's around 3 million. It was 3 million 4 years ago. I don't know. I don't have the actual number. I think now it's more residents because there is many people come to Kyiv from eastern Ukraine. So they got additional 200 people minimum. And also is not many cities in Ukraine who where is still have a job, still having some businesses running. So I think they have 3 and 3.5 million people living there.
Because the United Nations mentioned that there was at least 1,000 refugees, you know, people that were fleeing eastern Ukraine from.
I think there is at minimum 50,000 refugees now in Kyiv. And I think so even more at the other refugees, they spreading into different regions like in western Ukraine, like in region in the south, like in Odessa or Nikolaev or Kherson or maybe other regions either.
I was told that apartment prices went up in Lviv in western Ukraine due to the immigrants coming and fleeing the war in eastern Ukraine. So the question is that I have also is, like, so approximately how many hours today, if I'm in Kyiv today, the capital city of Ukraine, how many hours can I expect to maybe go without electricity in this very, very cold winter there?
No, I think so. Minimum 3 hours.
Okay, so it's gotten a little bit better, but it's still happening that there's still these power outages.
Yeah, no,
8 hours.
Yes, it's 8 hours total, and I think in some part of cities they have that situation, but at minimum 3 hours a day they has no electricity. On my memory, in early 90s, it was almost same situation. They had power off at the morning hours. They had power off at the lunch hours. It's 1 or 2 hours, and they had power off during the evening hours, around 6 and 8 o'clock. p.m.
Wow. Okay.
So I think
about
I was experiencing it myself. I know that.
About how cold is it right now in Kyiv on average?
I think they have something around there. I think so, zero or it's around zero by Fahrenheit they have. So they have, I think. By Celsius, they have around minus 20. So they have between 0 and 5 by Fahrenheit. 1 second.
So it can be life-threening for prolonged
periods. 5 minutes, okay?
Yep.
I got something to to buy some food for my cat. Sorry.
No
but
problem.
Okay, we can keep talking. No problem.
Great. Okay. So the it's pretty dangerous then at that temperature for the people of Ukraine to go for long periods without electricity. It can be life threatening,
yeah,
especially
yeah,
for
because
him.
Yeah, because another problem because they use that electricity for heating the apartment. Because as I know that because there is not too much gas, that gas supply is limited. There's another part that people, because heating is low, it's not cool to heat the building. So some people, they also using electric heaters to make the houses warmer so they can do this. So I think it's right. It's very difficult to survive. I saw a lot of news from Ukraine how to survive with no electricity, how to survive with no heating, but I think
really, really, really uncomfortable.
Well, let me ask you this. So I asked you about the coal, and the coal mines are in Donetsk and Lugansk regions of Ukraine predominantly, which is where I want to ask you if military action, if war in Ukraine still continues there, literally over the coal mines of the region.
Yeah, it will continue. I think it will not stop for next 5-6 months, because I saw the news from Ukraine. I was listening to that announcements from Ukrainian government, from President Ukraine, Mr. Poroshenko, and from Alexander Kachino, and they told that there was another 3 people gathering to the armed forces. They expected to get up to 200 people involved in the Ukrainian army to continue this anti-terrorist operation. For me, it looks a little bit strange. On one hand, they're trying to fight separatists in Ukraine. And on the other hand, it looks like they are doing some support, some help for them. So I see that this situation is completely illogical. I cannot understand what is happening inside, because it looks like there is more than one party that interesting about that situation. And I'm really feeling that this situation is not completely clear. I don't know what's happening in real time.
I had a friend, or ex-friend now, that's not clear on what the status would be right at the moment, but who had claimed to, well, he is trained at the U.S. Army, as a U.S. Army scout, which they're trained to operate beyond enemy lines. He's been in the Belize area for at least 2 decades. He's an American, and he's also told me he was trained at the best schools at Langley. And he called this war in eastern Ukraine, where, of course, there's been alleged Russian military involvement, a war of attrition.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a managed conflict with the idea to wear down the resolve of the target country, which in this case the target country is appearing to be Ukraine, by Russian forces. So have you heard, is it true?
Did you see that my recent post on Facebook, I was showing some pictures about who has was killing Ukrainians or doing the events during the February 2014. It's like, it looks like a lot of Caucasians people got involved. And what's now happening in the Russian army? Do you remember the latest statement from Kadyrov, the president of Chechnya? They're going to be Russian, and he's asking use Chechens like a Russian dogs, like a Russian security box. For me, it's very difficult to imagine how the people can accept the policy. But they're using their own puppet president of Chechnya. They're using this people from there in the Ukrainian conflict. And also there's a lot of other side that using Cossacks from Russia. They're using also, if you will read about last names of the people get involved in that conflict from the separatist side, you can hear, you can see a lot of Caucasian last names, like Chechens, like Dagestans, like Ossetian names in there.
Are you stating to me that officially, are there official reports from Ukrainian sources? Are there official reports that Russian Federation citizens or Russian Federation military is still in action against Ukrainian citizens?
Is now nobody reflect that the
Russian military?
Yes, now nobody reflect. Nobody receives that Russians involved in there. And also, if you read the last name of people who are involved in that situation, you will see a lot of not just Russian names, not just Russian last names, you will see a lot of Caucasian last names in there. It's the most military Caucasian region in Russia. It's Chechnya. And also the Chechen president, he's now having heavily pro-Russian position. It's some sort of a Caucasian Zhirinovsky. I can use this word combination to describe Ramzan Kadyrov. I have to come to my house now.
Well, I had read that the United States, President Barack Obama, the Obama administration, or Barack Obama himself, had signed some executive orders for more economic sanctions against some Russian citizens or Russian Federation people. And I think that was done around the 31st of December, the first of the year. And if I remember right, some of those were some of Kadyrov's people or some Chechens. So I think those were sanctions that were just, okay, so you're aware of that. Would you say that this is being reported in the media outside of Ukraine, that the Russian military is still involved and Russian citizens are still involved in military actions against Ukrainians right now?
Okay, during the news, you can see there's a lot of, it's not officially, but anyway, there is a lot of references from Russian officials which are confirming that the Russians are still involved in that process. And secondly, Russia did a lot of legal preparation to get Russian military forces involved in that process. And additionally, there is a lot of military machines, there is a lot of do you remember the story about the guys in green military form without any signs? They're using them widely in eastern Ukraine. So, inside of eastern Ukraine, they told there is armed forces of separatists, as they call themselves as resistance. But I think that most of them, they are Russian military. And do you remember the latest status, statement from Girkin, the head of separatist minister of the defense of the Donetsk Republic, how they call themselves? He also confirming that there's a lot of people come to Eastern Ukraine from Russia. I think they're not first using this practice. And during the Soviet times, they also used the volunteers in conflicts outside of the Soviet Union. Officially, there is no Russian presence in there because officially they can go to vacation, they can even sign off for the army, but really there is a Russian military consistently involved in that conflict because secondary,
okay,
they're now opposite the regular army in Ukraine. I think they need to have some tuition, they need to have some supply of any resources, any weapons, anything to resist the regular army. I do understand that the Ukrainian army was never being professional. I do understand that the Ukrainian army was never being prepared. For me, it's very difficult to understand how people who was never been in a military service or been there for many years ago and never had a professional training. I do remember how it was the Ukrainian army being 5 years ago, but the recently, they having some supply. They having some weapon supply. So I think on the separatist side, they still having some professional army right now because otherwise they cannot resist for so long time, right? They do resist I don't remember how long that conflict duration now. It's at least 6 or 7 months, right?
Right, and a kind of a managed conflict of war of attrition from what I've been told. And we see more humanitarian aid trucks coming in from Russia, which have allegedly been more than just humanitarian aid. Is that what you've heard?
Yep.
The humanitarian aid trucks that have arrived, the convoy of humanitarian aid that has come from Russia.
I think, yes. Now, they're now sending a lot of humanitarian convoys. I don't know how they're really using them, but I think they're using some of hidden supply of people. They're using it as some hidden supply or military. I also need to remember that there is no border between the separated territories and Russia, so they can freely move in both directions and nobody count them. You also need to understand that Ukraine officially did not control that part at all. Additionally, Ukraine cut off any communication between that these two parts of Ukraine. So now they don't have any idea. Do you remember, maybe you read some of my post about the Ukrainian Committee of Security and Defense? This committee knows nothing. They never control that situation. It's only thing they always stated, we don't know. It's like committee, we don't know, right?
Right.
There is biggest problem in that situation because nobody knows true. Because everybody hiding the true to protect their ass. Russia will never tell you true that they are using militaries, Russian armed forces in that conflict, because there is completely shut down even this weak relationship with Western world. In terms with Ukraine, we'll never told true they do not controlling that situation completely, because otherwise it will prove that they stole money.
Well, and also
It's another problem in Ukraine. You can supply
the media. The media there is now controlled, as I understood, by a new ministry, the Ministry of Truth, so to speak, a ministry that really heavily controlled it. And I've noticed that since this has been reported that they've made control, a ministry to control the journalists going into where the war zone is, the military action. We've seen a lot less news.
Yes.
Let's take a 3 or 4 minute break here. There'll be some music during the intermission, and if that's okay with you, we'll return here in about 3 or 4 minutes. This is Reverend Dr. Michael R. Vanderpool with Oleg Sonko.
Okay.
Sure, no problem.
I'm leaving my phone connected. Okay, I just connected my phone to charger, and I will come back in 5 minutes. Going to the store right now. I need to bring some food for my cat. Okay.
Great, and I understand it's very cold there in New York. All right, very good. So I'll talk to you. I'll wait for you here about 5 minutes.
Okay.
We'll play some music on this intermission. This is Reverend Dr. Michael R. Vanderpool with Oleg Sonko. Oleg is in New York City today, and it is very, very cold on this January 8th, 2015. I'm in Tbilisi, the Republic of Georgia, the capital city of Georgia, and it is here about 9:40 a.m. So we're going to play the Ukrainian national anthem and another version of that after that, and then we will return here on the Magi Star Astrology Talk Radio Show with Oleg Sonko, and talking about the war in Ukraine. And earlier I talked about my missing fiance, Eva.
Yeah.
Reverend Dr. Michael R. Vanderpool today has been speaking with Oleg Sumko, who is currently in New York City. Oleg and I met just previous to the Orange Revolution in Kyiv, Ukraine in 2004. Oleg at the time was testing and burning in, so to speak, debugging software for what is now today the Android phones and smartphones, those kinds of devices. So if you can imagine, about 10 or 11 years ago, this is what Oleg was doing with satellite phones, and this is what I saw him do when we'd have coffee at the mall or when we would meet up. This is what his work was, and he still continues all kinds of tech work today. In fact, he's now involved with some political work. Myself, I've traveled in over 28 different countries as far as including layovers or feet on the ground, five long-term, including Russia, Ukraine, and Georgia. I've been in Georgia over the years, well over a decade, five of those years at different points in my life. I married a girl from Ukraine, divorced her in February 2011. Her name was Yulia. She went on, after we separated in America, she went on into the United States military, into U.S. Army Airborne, served in Afghanistan, was on a lot of Hueys, a lot of choppers, she told me, and has seen a lot of Afghanistan. So she was U.S. Army Airborne, and then later, after I finished our divorce here in Tbilisi in February 2011, she went on into U.S. Special Operations, one of the first women in history to do so. And now she works, last I had seen on her professional LinkedIn page, for one of the most elite U.S. military agencies, the Department of Threat Response Agency, DTRA. So Defense Threat Response Agency has offices or locations also in Russia, Ukraine, and Georgia, and Kazakhstan, around the world. You can look that up on the internet. I myself sell books on alternative spirituality. I've done journalism under the NATO Military Press Committee in Georgia, the Republic of Georgia, also on Georgia's territorial integrity, filming at the Russian military occupation border, the creeping occupation that took place back in October 2013. You can see those videos on YouTube under the topic of Vanderpool and APA, or American Press Association. Also, again, that journalism, some events such as with the Ministry of Defense and a historical first meeting between a NATO military committee and then a NATO commander, Martel, meeting with the former Georgian Defense Minister, Irakli Alassania, first time in history American press was in the building, and that was me, as I filmed that historical first meeting back in February 2014. So I've done not only some talk radio, blog talk radio, and some YouTube videos, but I've been on the front line, so to speak, in dealing with issues with Georgia's aspirations to NATO membership and also Georgia's territorial integrity and their problems this last year with the Russian military creeping occupation. I've been there, I've seen it, and I interviewed some Georgian citizens about that. And so also during the Orange Revolution, at the time I was present, and Yulia was then my personal assistant, full-time, and interpreter. In her free time, she participated in the Orange Revolution. So she's quite the patriot from Ukraine, now an American citizen and still serving with the U.S. military at the highest levels. We are divorced. She's remarried and has a child. As for me, I have the girl that I mentioned earlier, Eva, the fiance, we went to attempt to get married here in Tbilisi. It had a residency application in, which we got an answer, a positive answer on that, but it was told that if I wouldn't, we wouldn't be able to marry and I'd have to leave the country. And they told her and us that we couldn't marry, and she's disappeared ever since. Family claims that they may know where she's at. Maybe she's up in a monastery or something somewhere, but she's went silent. This country's had a lot of problems with religious terrorism, religious extremism, which has been published in the BBC News of the May 17, 2013 events that took place here. Many people were beaten in the streets and so on, so it's quite a mess when it comes to religious extremism and what I call religious terrorism and religious harassment and disrespect by the Georgian Orthodox Church for human rights is pretty extreme. So, by the way, if you want to support the journalism that I've done, I've spent a lot of time and money, no salary, no return on that. Please visit my OMSH, that's OMSH, books and services eBay store.
Hey, Mike,
and,
I'm back.
Hi. Hi, I was just talking about my eBay OMSH books and services store. I don't know if you're familiar with the Anastasia books by Vladimir Magarin, Russian author.
Say again, please.
Are you familiar with the Anastasia series of books by the author Vladimir Magarin? She's a Siberian shaman girl, so to speak, and she's in the Siberian forest, and Vladimir is this, the character in the story, actually. Vladimir's the author, but he's a Russian businessman that goes there and has this fantastic kind of alternative spiritual kind of a spiritual experience with this girl that can foresee the future and heal and things. You are you familiar with the story? Anastasia. Vladimir Megre. It's a Russian author. But in any case, that's books I've been selling worldwide. They're a best-selling set of series of books, and they've sold more than 11 million copies worldwide. And you can get those at OMSH, that's OMSH Books and Services, at my eBay store. And also, I do astrology at universalstar.gs. There's another www before that, so if you need an astrological consult, I'm rather expert at finding out the extremes in life when somebody will be likely to experience the extremes of love or losses in love. So anyway, back to Oleg. Oleg, did you get your cat taken care of?
Yeah, right. I did, because otherwise there was no way to communicate, because if my cat is hungry, he will start punching me every single minute. I had the story. I was going to buy food for him one evening, and he started coming to me at 5 a.m. I was living in New Jersey, and there was no 24-hour stores around me, and I was waiting until 6 o'clock when the first store would get open. Otherwise, he's leaving me without sleep at all.
Wow. Well, listen, we've got 10 minutes left, and we close up the hour. I'll close out with a final song and maybe a few words in closing. So we've got actually a little bit under 10 minutes. About the situation in Ukraine, the American U.S. State Department has given a kind of a counter statement, a kind of a reprimand, I think, that's how I read it, against France and Germany, because France and Germany are suggesting that it's time to think about calling off the economic sanctions
against
Russia.
Yes, right. It's a big problem because because there are still a couple trends now happening in Europe, and the United States a little bit outside of that trend is good. But what's happening now in Europe? Europe is mostly has a huge dependence on Russia, because there is a lot of businesses are running on both sides, like car manufacturing, like food supply, like military contracts or everything. So there is a lot of things which Russia importing from Europe. And now European businesses, they're losing a lot of money. Also need to understand that the European financial position, it's still not so strong. And they now afraid about their own ass. Okay, they start forgetting about their freedom. They start forgetting about some ideas, some high aims, anything that they start thinking, okay.
Let's talk about how many Ukrainians in this week, honestly, would you estimate that have died at the hands of Russian military forces or Russian supported?
I think officially we're now talking about 5,000 people were in Ukraine from within that conflict. So it's official numbers, but unofficially it was in July 2014. I got this information from some guys from SBO, it's the Ukrainian State Security Service. They was talking about 12 or 17,000 people were killed during that conflict on the state of July.
We have UN official reports, which are probably also conservative or less than the reality.
Yes,
we have official UN reports of over a million. Well, over a million immigrants.
Right. I know that. Hi, Mike. Let me insert a couple of words here for now. I know that Israeli Ministry of International Affairs was expecting in April 2014 in about 300 people coming to Israel. I think, sir, about people with their Jewish nationality may do emigration from Ukraine. But we have other nationalities, we have other peoples, other countries. So we're now talking about at least million. Because I see now that official numbers in Ukraine, of resident of Ukraine was reduced It's more than a million. It's more than a million because, okay, we had some people died by initially. We got some people died by during this conflict, and we have more than a million people escaped from Ukraine. Okay, because it's not
okay,
safe. Yep.
Refugees fleeing the war is to be specific. These are people that have are fleeing the war. To clarify for the people listening, that they are refugees from war in eastern Ukraine.
Oh, yes. War refugees from Ukraine to Europe and to United States and to Israel and to Russia, because most of them come to Russia because there was no any visas requirements. They seem like most of the people speak Russian language, and they still remember the Soviet past. So the easiest way to escape is go to Russia. Because, yes, many people still have relatives in Russia either, and also Russia having... I think Russia was prepared to this situation because 1 year before, in end of 2012, they announced some specific program to easy immigration to Russia. So if you can state that you speak in Russian, and you agree go to Russia, and you agree to settlement in some less populated place in Russia, so you get even getting some money, and you get a Russian passport easily.
Right. Well, I don't know if you knew, but Sarah Palin talked about this. Sarah Palin, the Republican Sarah Palin, who campaigned against the U.S. President Barack Obama, talked about that if Barack Obama became president, that the Russians would take Crimea, and that was 4 or 5 years. That was, I think, 8 years ago. I mean, Sarah Palin, all over America, mm-hmm. we know this. If this has been planned for a long time by Russia, it's been an open secret that they have planned this. And, you know, we've had concerns about Georgia and its weakening its position with NATO and its defenses, by Russian interests, you know, which is what I think has happened with Ukraine. Do you think that that's probably an accurate statement, that Ukraine's been weakened in their defense in anticipation of this Russian attack?
Yeah.
This war of attrition. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say? We got about 3 or 4 minutes here. And go ahead.
Let me state another trend happening now in Russian periodic, is Russian newspaper, Russian media. So they start talking about historical belonging. Some territories to Russia, to Russian Empire, and they always start heavily talking about Eastern Ukraine. They start heavily talking about Crimea, and that's another one more trend. Maybe we need to pay attention on that. They start talking about Baltic states belonging to Russia. There is two different strategies. So they may be trying to seek attention to that part and start forgetting about Ukraine and Crimea, or other words, they start preparing about next move.
Right. You know, when I was in Russia, I was told very openly, and it was the common propaganda through radio, through, you know, 90% of Russia, as you know, is small cities, the villages, as we say, the rural areas. And they are seeming to be very soft heads to the propaganda of the state. And that propaganda that I was understanding was that Alaska is ours. It was a big mistake that the Russian queen gave it up. And we should take it back. And then also they talk about Finland. A friend from Moscow says, you know, Finland, yeah, we should take Finland back.
Yeah, Finland, like Estonia, like Latvia, like Lithuania. So there is all countries in the Baltic state. And this is what a recent trend. I was reading that a magazine yesterday. This came from one Russian organization, and they start putting a lot of articles about, okay, there is lost Russian regions because it was connected with the Russian King Peter I. So there is territories which belonging to Russia since the 18th century.
Wow. So the propaganda continues. That's your main point, if I've understood you, that their propaganda is prepared for Russian mentality to be prepared to further invasion or occupation of neighboring countries.
Yes,
and we got about
you
got about 30 seconds left. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us today? And I want to thank you for coming on and sharing this
with us. Maybe, I will keep watching for that, how this situation is developing. So I'm keep paying attention on Russian newspaper, Russian radios or television sometime during my job, or sometime also paying attention what things happening now in Europe. Do you remember today it was bad news come from France about the track happening in Paris with journalists. So there is, I think there is another trend that needs to start happening in the Western world. This country is open for immigrants. This country is open to refugees, try to help them, try to host or provide some support, a residency, whatever, but they was never required some sort of loyalty. So maybe there is another trend going to start happening very soon. So those people who came to that country, we don't know what's happening now in the United States, you know what's happening now in Europe. It started happening since early 2000. There is a lot of Islamic people start coming to Europe, coming to United States.
Okay,
a lot of freedom. But now,
I hate to interrupt you, but we've got less than 90 seconds left. So we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. Thank you for coming on today. I hope that the United States stays strong in supporting the Ukrainian people and the current nations.
Yes, I really hope that they will support, because in the past they supported Poland. In the past they supported Baltic states. It's why, because this country was survived against the Soviet Union, why the country is coming with their changes. But now that Poland it was good, really nice example how the country can be strong, how the country can change the future and became just a regular European state, the country with a voice. I really hope that Ukraine will be the next countries joining to Europe and start having strong voice, start influencing the situation, not being the country like the ball, which just changing hands to play off.
Well, thank you, Oleg. We're closing out, and I really, really appreciate you being on today.
Yes, thank you. Bye.